It's time to know your lane.
Why would Tavares sign a 1-year?
It's not happening. Like, don't even let's not even head down that rabbit hole, because people will start writing us and saying
it's not happening.
It's not happening.
And another thing that's not happening: Erik Karlsson is never getting traded to Toronto.
This is Overdrive on TSN 1050, the official voice of the Leafs.
Final hour, Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Craig Button in here. The O-Dog is out of here. SportsCenter hits in an early pregame. It's a 7 o'clock pregame tonight. Or 6 o'clock, 6:30 pregame, 7 o'clock puck drop. Leafs in Philly taking on the Flyers. No Austin Matthews. So he did not play Sunday night. And that was a bummer, because that was Matthews versus McDavid, and McDavid put on a clinic on Sunday night. That is the best non-point producing evening you're ever going to see someone put forward. He was unbelievable.
Yeah, he was.
And it would have been great to see how Matthews would have countered and what he could have brought to the table, but the Leafs are riding high. They've won a lot of games recently, a lot of it based on their goaltending playing so well. They've been lucky in some ways. Their game has been tailing off a little bit in terms of puck possession, in terms of the amount of time they're playing in their own end. But Philly is not exactly a world beater, so there's no reason why you can't walk into Philly and pick up 2 points tonight.
It's interesting with the Leafs, too. Like, I mean, they have that game in Calgary where they give up 20 shots. I thought that was a real complete game for them. I thought the first 25 minutes, two nights later in Edmonton, they were really good. The last two periods in Vancouver, they were really good. You know, it seems that, and is it youth? Is it where they're trying to find a balance with their playing style and, you know, some of the things that they might need to do better? But they have some real good stretches.
Mm-hmm.
But then they come back. It's like it turns 180 degrees. You're going, where was that team we just saw there that was really in control? And maybe that's just part of the growth of a team with a lot of young players.
I think it probably is.
Yeah.
You know, I think every once in a while it's probably a good thing to take a step back and remember where we were. Even 12 months ago, mm-hmm. they had a really slow start where they were blowing games and giving up leads and giving up a lot of shots and a lot of bad goals and defensive breakdowns. This time last year, December 12th, 2016, nobody was putting them in the playoffs. Like, they were not in a playoff position at that point, I don't believe, and no one was thinking they were going to have the second half that they did. All the kids will continue to perform the way that they were. Freddie Anderson was going to play more like he did in November of 2016 as opposed to October of 2016. And it took us a while to finally realize, you know what, they got enough talent, they're a good enough team. And even that said, they just got in.
Mm-hmm.
They just got in. Tampa almost caught them. The Islanders almost caught them. They picked up a big win on the second last night of the year to clinch a spot into the playoffs. And that's 12 months ago. Go back 18 months ago, they're the worst team in the league. The worst team in the league, albeit with a system filled with kids that were going to come up and perform and play well with them. A plan for Nylander to be here, yeah. Brown, Hyman, Zaitsev, a trade for Freddie Anderson, the hiring of Babcock. I mean, there were things on the horizon that were going to make you believe, okay, they've got a chance to get better. They're not going to be the 30th place team.
Right.
No one last year thought they'd be dead last again.
No.
But 18 months ago, the worst team in the league. Openly tanking, awful. Couldn't watch, boring hockey. It was bad. And now, all of a sudden, so much has gone their way, and they've had so much success, including winning the lottery, winning the Rookie of the Year with Matthews, individual success, team success, that, yeah, I think it's like we don't realize how quickly it's happened. And there still is more to go here. There's more to learn here.
I agree with you there. So let me, and just real quickly, and, you know, I'll cut out once Steve joins us, but, you know, is that with you? And I mean, I'm not big on the Ottawa Senators coming into the season, but the whole idea of the neutral zone, I think teams adjust.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think there's more adjustment now happening in the NHL, you know, where teams, okay, that's what they're really good at, and we're going to counter it? Like, you know, we all talk about the New England Patriots, how well they adjust from week to week. Are we seeing that now on a more consistent, you know, it used to be systems, but Guy Boucher can talk about a system all he wants.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work.
You have to adjust. I'll give you a TFC example of that. The championship game, they played a 4-4-2 formation. They had not played that all year. Greg Vanney looked at what Seattle was doing, mm-hmm. looked at how his team was going to match up. This was the best team in MLS history. This was the team playing at home. This was a team that was healthy, that was potent, that was determined to redeem themselves from a year ago. And he walked into that locker room and said, throw out the other formations you guys are used to. This is what we're going to do because I believe this is what we have to do to win. And it was successful. So if the best team in the league is saying,
yep.
we got to make an adjustment, I would think a team like Ottawa, who is one of the worst teams all of a sudden, should probably be willing to do that.
Well, they have to or nothing's going to change.
Or nothing's right? going to change.
Well, just quickly, too. I mean, Greg Vanney also at halftime of the game against Columbus in the Eastern Final.
Right.
I mean, he told Christian Jack, he said, no, we got to play forward more. But then Christian said, how are you going to do that? And he went right through his game plan. How they were going to do it, and they did that.
Have to make adjustments.
And you have to be, you have to have the play, you have to instill that. You can't just say, we're going to play this. The players are going, what?
Mm-hmm.
They know what's coming, and they
That's
know
right.
what they can do.
And they have, you have to have belief that your players can perform
exactly.
that way, too. Winter meetings continuing down in Orlando. Today is Manny Machado's day. That's what it sounds like. Everyone's focused on what the Orioles could end up doing with Machado. He'll be a free agent after next year. He's an absolute stud. Here's our TSN baseball analyst, Steve Phillips. Steve, take us through this Machado news. How would you handicap the chances of him actually being moved this offseason?
It's a very peculiar situation. I mean, he's in the same spot as Donaldson is. The Orioles seem to be, I guess, saying that they don't think they're going to win, and therefore they're going to go ahead and move him. And you would think that they would at least try to sign him and negotiate a contract first before making a decision. Just walk away from it. I don't quite understand that part of it. They haven't had any negotiations whatsoever. Machado has kind of made it clear he'd like to play shortstop as opposed to third base. They could use him at shortstop there. The other part of it that I don't understand is if they have any vision of re-signing him, they're much better served to trade him in season than now, because if you trade him now and you try to sign him afterwards, you're going to give up a draft pick. If you trade him in season and he's traded during the year, then there's no draft pick compensation attached to that kind of player. So I don't know. You know, it's hard to know. And with the Orioles, they're the most difficult to predict because the owner gets involved so much in the baseball operations. He handcuffs the general manager and because they don't take risks on anything. And last year they had a deal done with Zach Britton going to the Astros. And at the last minute, Peter Angelo said, no, I changed my mind. Don't trade him. And so I don't know what to think about this. I mean, they gave money to Chris Davis that should have gone to Manny Machado. Why spend the money on Chris Davis and give him any dollar that could prohibit you from signing Machado in the future, who's a 26-year-old stud? So, and if you're going to trade for him now, how much are you going to be willing to give up if you actually want to keep him afterwards? So, you know, the Phillies seem to be in on it a bit. The Cardinals, I think, seem to be in on it a little bit. We'll see if the Giants get in on it and what they might do. They need a third baseman as well. So it'll be an interesting case study for Josh Donaldson's situation later in the year.
I want to just pick up on something that you said, Steve, earlier about the Oilers, the Orioles, maybe not having this idea that they're going to win. After what Giancarlo Stanton said about getting out of Miami, you know, new managers, new players, and always seeing, you know, there was no real traction to stay there. Do you sense that the top players, if they don't see a chance to win, are going to be a little bit more vocal and we see more of this type of movement with star players?
Well, it's a good question, right? Is this going to set a tone for something? I mean, typically, a team that signs a player to a long-term deal and can afford it, you know, also thinks they're going to compete. Now, if you start doing a 10- and 12-year deals, there will be windows within a 12-year contract that you may not be as competitive as you were when you first signed the player, and you can't really let the players control all of that. You know, I think that for Stanton, you know, it was a unique situation considering the change in ownership down there, the small market, what a significant percentage of their payroll he was eating up. I mean, listen, he's about 25-30% of their payroll, and it was only going to go up. And it was, especially if they were going to continue to cut payroll, it made sense to go somewhere else and try to compete. It made no sense for the Marlins to give him that contract in the first place. But the new owner thought, maybe I'll make a run at winning. Maybe it'll help me sell the team. It could be I'll take a loss there to get the $1.2 billion when I sell the team. And as much as people want to criticize Jeffrey Loria's methods, He got a new stadium that he didn't have to pay for, and he got $1.2 billion for a team that he paid $165 million for. So I don't know. I think he actually did a pretty good job overall.
With Steve Phillips, our baseball analyst, Ross Atkins said what you'd expect him to say yesterday, that he doesn't care about Stanton going to the Yankees and what people are clamoring about and talking about and how that affects the odds in Vegas. But let's be honest, he has to be at least concerned to an extent. I mean, the Yankees were already better than the Jays, and now they're that much better than they were on Friday. I mean, how could this possibly not affect what the Jays think they're going to do over the next 2 months?
Well, let me translate general manager's speak for you. When a general manager says they don't care, it means he cares. Because as a general manager, you care about everything. You worry about everything. You're concerned about everything. And effectively, what I think he was trying to say is that we're not going to make a knee-jerk reaction trying to keep up with the Joneses. Instead, he said, I don't care, which you know, isn't really accurate. Obviously, you have to gauge where you are, where the competition is, and what you need to do to be able to compete. And he does that. He just isn't going to go. And you know, people are saying, well, the Red Sox need to go out and sign J.D. Martinez right now to keep up with the move that Stanton going to the Yankees. You know, he's not going to play that game. They're going to stick to a plan. They should reconsider the plan. Certainly, you have to ask yourself the question. But, you know, in the end, I think the Orioles and Rays should punt. I think they should sell. I think they should disassemble. They can't keep up with the Red Sox and the Yankees. The one thing where the way the Blue Jays are different is that if Aaron Sanchez is what he was in 2016, and he's that guy this year, along with Stroman and the advancements that he's made with Estrada and Happ, if they can add another starting pitcher, if they can fortify their bullpen, they have, you know, in order to beat the Yankees and Red Sox, you're going to have to pitch against them. You're going to have to outpitch them. And there's a chance that the Jays can do it. And so I don't abandon the plan. I stick to it. I still try to sign Donaldson. There's speculation that they're in on asking about Marcell Ozuna today down here with the Marlins, that he's the next guy they'd move. The problem is that for the Marlins, they have every right to ask for Vladimir Guerrero Jr. or Bo Bichette in that deal as the lead guy and then get something else in return for 2 years of Marcell Ozuna. The Jays can't make that trade. They can't play in that. They're much better served to sign a free agent than to do that. And I don't think they're going to sign a free agent beyond understanding that they only have Donaldson for this year. So Donaldson's the key. And what I don't get is, why not engage in negotiations? Why not at least see where you are? Because there's still a really good pool of players out there that if you sign Donaldson, then you might invest in some different ways. You might be more creative with what you're willing to take on as contracts or what you might be willing to give up in the trade market. But without that, without knowing that, then you're really, you know, setting yourself up for bringing in players in January who are looking for the one-year deal. You're trying to capture lightning in a bottle. So you're going to try to get that one guy in a bounce-back season, hope that he plays well for you, and that it can help you win this year. And then if you don't get Donaldson signed, you make a decision about whether you want to completely take it apart or whether you want to try to keep trying to compete.
Well, Atkins keeps talking about this core that they have, and he was speaking with the media recently, and he said, quote, fortunately, we're in a position because of our core that we don't have to do anything to start the season. I mean, what core is he talking about? This was a core that won 76 games. Like, I'll give you Sanchez and Stroman and Ozuna and Donaldson, clearly. But if you think Tulowitzki and Martin and Smoke is going to replicate what he did a year ago, and Kendrys Morales and Kevin Pillar, if that's a core that he thinks is going to compete with the Yankees and Red Sox, he's crazy.
Yeah. Well,
what core is he talking about?
And again, I hear what you're saying, and I understand what he said. Because, you know, what we do as general managers, and I guess as I'm on this side of it, I realize maybe we aren't as good at it as we think. I mean, it's a little bit of a spin job that he's trying to get people to buy into Martin and Tulowitzki being productive this year. Now, I do know the Jays believe that they had a lot go wrong last year, and if one or two of those things didn't go wrong, they would have been absolutely in the mix for a wild card. But that was because the wild card fell back to the pack a little bit, and nobody really seemed to separate, and the Twins finally, you know, edged out everybody else. But it's not often that 86 wins or 85 wins are going to get you a wild card spot. So, so what he's saying is, I'm not going to be panicked right now, and that's the message he wants out there, that, look, I'm comfortable, that I, and what he's saying is I have a warm body to play every position, is really what he said. That's the GM speak, is that I actually have a player that I know I can slide in at every position, so we can start this way. It may not be what I want to do, and it may not make us the most competitive, but I at least know I have that, that I can go out there and be in a position to try to compete, understanding that I want to do more. I want to desperately get better and improve, but I'm also a bit concerned that I may not be able to do it, so I don't want to oversell either. So there's a lot of GM speak going on in there. We spin, we dance, we try to oversell in some areas, undersell in others, and never create expectations, because you can only disappoint once you create those expectations.
So, Steve, you were talking about the importance of engaging in negotiations with Donaldson. And it seems to me that it's not just engaging with Donaldson, it's also what the ripple effects could be for potential other deals, adding other players that could make your team stronger and better. So is there any reason why they're not engaging with Josh Donaldson in negotiations?
That is a great question. I don't understand it. It would have been a priority for me in the offseason. Because to me, it is the direction. It is the wind vane that tells you which direction the wind's blowing and which direction you should go. So it would have been my November thing. Now, what I do know is they had not engaged with him as of yesterday. I know that. They had not engaged him as of yesterday. Now, Dan Lozano, the agent, who also, by the way, is Manny Machado's agent, yes. He is in Orlando and has shown up here. I think he got in either yesterday or today. But he is here, and so he's available for a meeting. It's not like that they can't find a window within their windows of meeting with other teams to sit down and talk about it. Now, maybe they'll wait until, you know, arbitration numbers get submitted. A lot of times that can be the impetus to start to drive a conversation around contract, and you kind of wait for that value for this season and work off of that. So that could certainly be something. But, you know, the interesting part of it is that neither the Orioles nor the Blue Jays have had any conversations about the player. Like, the Orioles were talking about trading Machado without even making an attempt to try to sign him. Now, why wouldn't you try? Why wouldn't you? I mean, don't you owe it to your fan base? Now, the Orioles are peculiar, as I said, because they didn't even send in a submission for Ohtani. Dan Duquette, their general manager, said, yeah, we don't believe in the posting system, philosophically opposed to the posting system, so we didn't participate. What that means is my owner doesn't want to write a $20 million check in one season, so we didn't want to do it. Even though it's a player you could get for that has a $200 million value, we can get him for $23 million. We don't want to do it because we don't want to write the check for $20 million right now. It's bizarre to me. It's malpractice, quite honestly, but it's bizarre. You know, some of the decision-making, there's logic behind it. And you know, there will be a reason and a method of the madness, because there's really smart guys. Look, there's a smart guy. I mean, Atkins and Shapiro are smart. They've got a plan. It's just different than the plan I would have had to start to initiate and carry on those negotiations.
Well, and the truth is, I mean, using the Baltimore analogy and applying it here, is there are marching orders from behind the scenes that we're not privy to. And my concern in Toronto is, with this crew, is the marching orders are do whatever you have to convince people to buy tickets and to keep loading up the Rogers Center and believing that this team is something that they're not. And that comes with the gig. You know, if you're an employee of the team and you're told this is what you got to do, this is what you got to say. But I have this team won 76 games, and I hear what you said. And Atkins has told me that personally before, that if you look beyond the first month of the season, they were a much better team than their record would indicate. But they're also the oldest team in the league. You know, they're also a team that has really, they did what they did 2 years in a row, and back-to-back appearances in the ALCS was a blast, but they got old real quick. And Anthopoulos unloaded the system, and it's going to take them a while to reload. And the Yankees got really good really quickly. And the Red Sox kind of have a combination of young and old with Devers and Benintendi and, you know, Mookie Betts to go along with Pedroia and some older players. But I think that is probably what's happening here, Steve. Just me reading the tea leaves, they want people to believe that they're better than they really are. Well, and the plan might be for them to not be that good, but they're not going to tell people that.
Yeah. I mean, you could close your eyes and dream along with them that Sanchez and Stroman and Happ and Estrada could bounce back and do it. Now, you know, when you have a lot of ifs, they don't always turn out in the positive. It's just the nature of the beast. Some do, some don't. Some are kind of in between. But they're hoping for Donaldson. They have to have some level of hope that they're going to get a bounce back performance from Martin and Tulowitzki to where they're a little bit better overall. And so that's definitely a possibility that they're going to get a little bit of pushback there. But can you expect the same thing from Justin Smoak? You know, what are you going to get from Morales this year? So there's still a lot of questions about this team. There's some part of it they're going to go in with a hope and a dream that it's going to get a little bit better from some of the guys. And it's not unfair to expect it, but the reality is not everybody gets better in the same year. Not everybody bounces back. Some guys actually can get worse. So there are a lot of questions. The roster's not put together yet. They will add players to it. The fact that they did check in on Ozuna is good because at least they're not giving up on even the potential of that, although I think it's extremely unlikely that they're able to put that sort of a deal together.
Thank you, Steve. Always appreciate it. We'll do it again soon.
Okay, you got it.
There's Steve Phillips, our Jays and baseball analyst and insider.
He's outstanding.
Yeah, he's so good. But
he really is. And I mean, the combinations, permutations, the thinking, I mean, he really is. I mean, he's just...
Well, I mean, to my point about where the Jays are at, and this speaking out of both sides of their mouth, I think you can use the Donaldson example as a perfect one. I mean, I would either try to sign him long-term or trade him this offseason. I've been saying that for months. Because the idea of bringing him back, you can use that as a marketing ploy. No, we're in it to win it. We believe we're good. You got to have Donaldson if you want to win. And I think some people might buy into that. But they're also putting themselves in a position where he's going to walk for nothing at the end of next year, which they may be fine with if they're openly trying to turn things around here and shed money and bring in kids and load up a farm system.
Well, those are different directions.
Exactly.
And he used the term weather vane. But he said Donaldson's the weather vane in terms of what direction you want to go in. I think that's really important to know. Did you read Cathal Kelly today in the Globe and Mail?
No, I didn't see Cathal.
And I'll just try to give it. I'll just try to give it a real quick. But he talked about FC and why they won and where it took root. And it was took root 4 years ago, or just over 4 years ago, when Tim Leiwicki, in his interview to become president of MLSE, asked him, "If I bring you David Beckham, can I sign him?" And they said yes. And really, what the thing was, we're going to spend money to win.
In other words, we're going to, yeah.
And, you know, and somebody asked, I don't know who Cathal, he didn't say who. They said, we'd never been asked the question before. But this whole idea that the Maple Leafs or MLSE didn't want to spend money, he said, hey, are you ready to do it? And now here he is.
TFC benefited greatly from that.
Well, I think the same thing about Donaldson. What message does it say? You know what? We are going to be players here.
But I think also the reverse message could be applicable here, too. As an owner, are you willing to be awful for a few years? Because that can go both ways.
Well, and we saw
and
that
the Leafs did that.
We saw that with MLS.
We saw it with the Leafs. Yeah, Shanahan walked in and said, we're going to be awful for a couple of years. But, do you have the stomach for it?
Well, and so you had to have it both ways, right? But remember who was the linchpin of both those?
Tim Leiwicki was right in the middle of it. Yeah, no, I hear you.
Right. So it's just interesting when we talk about Donaldson.
He's almost a mythical figure in sports, in Toronto sports history already. Like, he came and went, and he's been gone for a couple of years, and now
the fruits of his labor. But what he put in place is going nowhere.
Yeah, and he's done it. He did a great job. He never got enough credit. Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider, will join us. What's up with this Carlson situation in Ottawa? What's up with Austin Matthews? Leafs in Philly tonight. We'll tee it up with Bob next. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 on the TSN Go app and on TSN 2. Brian Hayes and Craig Button in here. The World Junior Camp continues down in St. Catharines. Every year, I would say, 90% of the team is pretty much picked. Like, you kind of know who's going to be on it.
It's funny you're saying that, because I'm just looking at the guys. I mean, I think we know, and Bob will update us on where the fights for the positions are, but there's definitely locks.
Yeah, you feel pretty good about certain players. And here's Bob McKenzie live from St. Catharines. The Hockey Insider is brought to you by Finance It. Is that safe to say about 90% every year locked in before camp?
Yeah, you know what? I think that number's a lot lower this year, to be honest with you. I'm not saying that there aren't locks. I'm not saying that there aren't front runners for the remaining core spots. But I think this year, outside, once you get past 6-7 forwards and once you get past the top four defense, I think there's some interesting decisions to be made.
Let me ask you this, Bob, real quick. And we've seen the 2015 team that won the gold medal. I mean, Sam Morin had a really good tournament, and Dylan Hetherington had a really good tournament. But this looks to me like on the blue line that they're going to have, I don't want to say small, 6 foot, some guys sub 6 foot, and that they have a decision to make. Are they going to add a couple of bigger guys like Hetherington or Morin, or are they going to go with a smaller, like in a quick moving defense?
Yeah, and really, there's only two guys that are quote unquote big defensemen. One is 6'4" Cal Foote, Tampa Bay first rounder, plays in Kelowna, and 6'7" Logan Stanley, the Winnipeg Jet first rounder, who plays in Kitchener. And otherwise, the defense are, you know, Connor Timmins is 6'1", but there's a lot of 6-footers, and there's a lot of guys. There's four or five, there's six of the 11 guys that are 5'10", 5'11". It is a smaller defense. It's a very mobile defense. And I mean, when I look at the core four guys up front would be the three returnees, and that would be Clegg and Bean. Bean is, I think, listed as 6'1", but he's not at all a physical presence. He's the exact opposite. He's a pure offensive guy. Clegg is a puck mover and an offensive guy, not overly big. And now you add Victor Mete, who's not a returnee, but from the NHL, and he's under 6 feet, although he's extremely, you know, good skater, good puck mover, and also pretty good two-way defenseman. And then you've got Dante Fabbro, who's a real solid two-way defenseman, and he's 6 foot or 6'1". So there's no what you call big guys that are locks. And if they, you know, the next two guys that some people might argue are in the pecking order is Cale Makar, who's dynamic, but he's by no means big. He's under 6 feet tall. And Connor Timmins, who I think is listed at 6'1". He's not a physical presence, but he's a real steady two-way guy. So it is interesting, you know, do they sprinkle in a Foote or a Stanley? And do they have enough guys that can take care of business in their own end when they don't have the puck? Because they sure have enough guys who, once they get the puck, they're off to the races.
Yeah, and I would just add this to it. I mean, we know what Morin, Hetherington did. They were really good on that team in 2015, but Clegg, Bean, Mete, Fabbro, and Josh Mihura, who's in camp, those five kids were all on the Ivan Linka team in 2014,
right,
or 2015, that won the gold medal. And the other two guys were David Quenneville, who wasn't invited, and right, Samuel Girard, who's in Colorado.
He's in the National Hockey League.
A sub 5'10" defenseman. So they did have great success with a sub 6 foot defense.
Yep. Yeah, and I think to a large degree that's the way the game's going.
Yeah.
But, you know, you've got to, it's not even so much how big you are, because I think people would argue that, you know, this, from what I understand, I haven't seen the San Jose second rounder Mario Ferraro play at UMass Amherst this year. But I watched him today, and he's really quick. He's not very big. I think he's 5'10". He's really fast. But it looked to me like he's got the ability to defend, you know, playing stick on puck, stick on stick, very well, separate people. So the question then becomes, you know, not whether you're big enough, but whether you can read and react, and you're adept when you don't have the puck. And that's going to be the determination they're going to have to make here over these games the next 3 days.
With Bob McKenzie, your Hockey Insider. All right, let's get to the NHL news. Erik Karlsson, who all of these defensemen would love to play like come their NHL years if they get there. This news is crazy because the team's an absolute tire fire right now. And they just made a move like a month and a half ago, a big move, bringing in Duchesne, sending out tourists and prospects and picks, essentially to win now. I'm sure they believed they could win now. They were a game away from the Cup final last year. And now they're going to Karlsson and other players and asking for their no-trade list. And Karlsson acknowledged it today, said, yeah, it happened, it's just business. But it feels like this has to be awkward. I mean, what do you make of this, and what should we make of this news in Ottawa?
Well, put it this way. I don't think that they want to trade Erik Karlsson. I don't think they're contemplating that. But now that the word has gotten out that they asked for a bunch of players' no-trade lists, including Karlsson's, they're going to get calls on him. So Pierre Dorion's obliged, if he gets an offer, to take it to owner Eugene Melnyk. But between now and the trade deadline, that currently is not the plan. Now, the plan can change because you said it's a tire fire. I don't know what's worse than a tire fire, but if they lose 9 of the next 10, that's worse than the tire fire that's going on right,
right.
now. And does the plan change then? And, you know, but here's what I think. I think what they want to do is they want to get to the summer and they want to sit down with Erik Karlsson and they want to try to do a long-term extension. That's what they want to do. When they get sitting down face-to-face with Erik Karlsson in the summer, that's when they'll know, looking across the table at him, is this a guy who wants to stay here and sign with us if the conditions are right? Or is this a guy who's got 1 foot out the door? Because if he's got 1 foot out the door and you're kind of spinning your wheels trying to get him re-signed, you have to trade him. You can't let him walk for nothing at the end of the year if you're convinced that he's actually walking. And that now, Craig will be the first to tell you, being an executive in this league, the clock starts ticking on him as an asset. Mm-hmm. And his greatest value on a trade would occur between now and the trade deadline at a time when it's inverse to how badly you want to trade him. The Senators want to trade Erik Karlsson, not at all right now. That's the plan. We do not want to trade Erik Karlsson. If they decided to trade Erik Karlsson right now, they would get more for him now, much more for him now, than they would if they have to trade him on July 1 or July 15th or August 1st. Or, again, they'll get more for him on July 1 or July 15th or August 1st than they will if they trade him next December or leading up to the trade deadline next season. So he is a diminishing asset if he's going to walk out the door. But if you can get a long-term deal done with him, then he's your centerpiece guy. So there's a lot of moving parts here. But right now, I think the focus in Ottawa is pretty clear. Let's try and make a trade for Hoffman. Let's try and make a trade for Ceci. Let's try and make a trade for Peugeot. Let's try and make a trade for Zach Smith, any one of those guys, and see if we can't spark things and get the team back going in the right direction again.
Well, they got a barn burner ahead of them tonight in Buffalo. I mean, that's must-see TV. I can't wait for it. I'm sure you'll be all over it, Bob. And enjoy yourself in St. Catharines. Thank you for doing this.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Bob McKenzie, our Hockey Insider, brought to you by Finance It. Add a payment plan to your tool belt and break down large price tags into easy, affordable payments with Finance It. Thanks again to Bob McKenzie. It sounds like Joey Votto may be calling in.
Well, that'd be nice.
Lou Marsh today.
I was just talking about Steve Phillips, you know, how good, and you know, Bob with his history with the World Junior and, you know, not only understanding, you know, what different iterations of Team Canada looked like, where competition was, but how things have changed, right? Like, you know, we would have never talked about sub-6-foot defensemen, you know, comprising the team, but mm-hmm. I mean, we're really lucky to be able to tap into the knowledge of some just terrific, terrific people.
Well, the World Juniors right around the corner. Yeah. But again, today, the big news in this country, the Canadian Athlete of the Year was awarded. 2-time winner now, Joey Votto. Won back in 2010. He won it again earlier today. 2017's Canadian Athlete of the Year, well-deserved. His numbers were absolutely off the charts.
Oh, yeah.
And he joins us now. We've never caught up with Joey Votto. This is great. Congrats on the news. Thank you for doing this, Joey.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me. Brian and Craig, just want to make sure you guys can hear me okay.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, we can hear you.
We got you. Are you in Toronto? Where are you?
I'm down in California. I'm in the Venice area.
Okay. So take us through this. I mean, you've won it before, so you're a veteran when it comes to being named the Canadian Athlete of the Year. But this is, I mean, you've been up for MVPs. You've won MVPs. But we're talking baseball, hockey, baseball, basketball, every sport. You know, we all play up. There's a lot of people up here, and you were announced as the best Canadian athlete of 2017. How cool was that?
Very cool. Very cool. I have mentioned this before, but I have a great deal of admiration for all of the other athletes in their respective sports. I you know, I'll study them or I'll watch film on different athletes. So to be amongst the group that I won the award, but to just be amongst the group was very special to me. Male, female, no matter the sport, I'm very, very proud of being amongst that group, and to have been selected the winner is even better.
Well, as I said, your stats this year off the charts. Craig and I were talking about this earlier. You matched a stat that only two players in baseball history have ever put forth, and that would be Babe Ruth and Ted Williams. When you're in that kind of company, I mean, what does that mean to you to kind of set the standard to put yourself in company like Babe Ruth and Ted Williams and great players of baseball's past?
It's not one of those things that you know is going to happen until after the season. And I was surprised and thought it was very cool that I was amongst that group. There's a lot of fantastic players that I compete against who do wonderful things, and I just think that to be amongst the all-time greats in one particular category is really very, very cool. And those are two of my favorite players all time. I mean, I don't think I'm in the minority saying that, but I am a little bit of a I've had interest in the history of the sport, and those two fellas are legends. And to be the third amongst that group is very, very cool, very surprising, and I'm very happy about that.
How often have you compared your stats on any given season or after any given season compared to the great players of all time? Do you compare stats?
You know, I'd be lying if I said I didn't. I mean, I try not to look at them during the season, but after the season, I will say I've always kind of had a thing for the all-time greats, and my favorite baseball player of all time is Ted Williams, and I've met Hank Aaron and Willie Mays, and I grew up admiring some of the great players of the generation preceding mine. So I do look at that sort of thing, and I do try to compete with them, and it's something that I think keeps me interested. And this is not a different sort of category. I mean, Wayne Gretzky's won it four times, and Sidney's won it twice, and there's a few others that have won it multiple times, but to be amongst this group is again, it has me looking at the greats in Canadian sporting history.
We're chatting with Joey Votto, who won the Lou Marsh Award today for the second time.
So we talk about history, Joey, but we see how the game, the adjustments, and how prolific you've been able to be, not just this year, but in the years leading up to this year. You know, with so much scouting, the pitchers having, a book on Joey Votto, what are you doing to try to stay ahead of everybody that knows how prolific you are and are trying to make sure that you don't do the damage that you've been doing?
Yeah, I just try to bring awareness to my strengths and my weaknesses, and I just try to always beat people to the punch, beat my competition to the punch, and I don't think it's much more complicated than that. Of course, priority number one is physically being able to do my job, express my skills at close to their best on a daily basis. But other than that, the scouting and all the data that the team supports us with, I try to use all of that stuff to my benefit. This is not uncommon. Most players are trying to do this sort of thing. So
yeah, no, and I agree with you. But I think you hit for power, you hit for average, you're patient at the plate. I mean, it seems that we get these stretches where it becomes a power game, and then it becomes just get on base and take a lot of pitches. It seems that you just go along and do whatever is necessary at any given moment in time. And is that something that you really pride yourself on, to be able to play and be successful any way they want to try to play you?
Yeah, there's no there's no hard and fast rule. I think you always have to adapt and adjust, and I think you've always got to be a step ahead to be to perform at a high level. And I think that that's the sort of thing I try to do, and I think a lot of great players in general, people and players in general try to do that. So I'm glad that the work I've done behind the scenes has paid off.
With Joey Votto here on Overdrive, he was announced as the Lou Marsh Award winner earlier today, Canadian Athlete of the Year, the second time he's won that. You're from Toronto. You're the greatest ball player in this city's history. And whenever Andrew Wiggins is in town, he's asked about playing for the Raptors. Whenever Connor McDavid's in town, he's asked about playing for the Leafs. How
Wait,
often?
Connor's from Toronto?
He's from Newmarket, just outside. It counts.
That's not Toronto. We'll give me a break.
Yeah, hey, Joey, I'm glad you're calling him out on that.
We'll
right
take
that
it.
Is North not Bay, Toronto.
If McDavid was from North Bay, they'd be calling him from Toronto. All so right. Good for you.
I grew up on Lakeshore and Park Lawn. That was a bike ride from Rogers Centre. And I don't even claim Toronto. So if Newmarket is Toronto, then I live at the corner of, you know, Queen and Young. Give me a break.
All right, Ontario then. Well, we're all from the same province. I mean, how often do you get bothered from friends and family back home about the idea of being a Blue Jay or even dream of ever playing for the Blue Jays?
I'm done dreaming about playing for teams. I've fortunately been put in a position where I can play for a dream franchise, a historic franchise, the first major league franchise. I've got a beautiful uniform I get to put on. I got a fantastic number that's been mine since I was a rookie. I know the city. I know the people. I know my route to work. Played in the same stadium my entire career. You know, Toronto, that's I'm very happy for them. They've had a great run over the last little bit, but you know, I'm looking forward to Cincinnati's run, and I'm looking forward to being a part of that, and I'm looking forward to winning a couple rings before I'm done playing in a Reds uniform.
Well, they're lucky to have you, that's for sure. I mean, they're obviously they got a great player and great Canadian, and congrats again on winning the Lou Marsh a second time in your career, and really appreciate you taking some time for us today. Thank you for doing this.
Yeah, no problem. Hey, to be fair to all the Toronto... To be fair to all the Toronto athletes, there's not really very many Toronto athletes. So to live in Toronto proper and to be an athlete, wow, that's quite an achievement. Most of us are just from outside of the city.
Just
so,
on the outside.
I grew up in Mimico. I met Brandon Shanahan one time at a Raptors game. And mm-hmm. I said, hey, man, you're from Mimico. I just wanted to let you know. You were an inspiration to me as a professional athlete. And he didn't blow me off, but he didn't feel like he had the time of day. So
right.
let Brandon know I've got two of these and he's got none. So thank you very much.
We'll send that along to him. We will make sure he knows who you are now. We'll make sure he's aware of that.
I don't mean it. I'm just playing around. Yeah. Anyway, thanks for having me, guys.
All right, Joey. Thanks for doing this. Congrats again. Joey Votto. Shanahan won't be big time in him ever again.
That was great. That was great.
Mimico. There's something about Mimico, though, where like they refuse to accept the Toronto city limits. Like they're like, I'm not from Toronto. I'm from Mimico. Like I understand that if you're from Mississauga.
I did like the way he shut you down on McDavid being from Toronto.
He played for the GTHL.
He moved from Newmarket to come down and play.
That's right. Yeah, if you played in Toronto, the GTHL, even though there are teams from outside of Toronto, like Mississauga, Vaughan, Markham,
there's lots of guys from Peterborough come and play for the GTHL.
I hear you.
Anyway, he was great.
He's great. Great player.
Well, I think
that's the right answer to give. If you're a Reds fan, you should be ecstatic with that answer.
Well, the other thing I will say really quick, too, is that when you consider the success that he has, like all great players, right? I mean, there's more focus on trying to get him out, and all they do is just stay on top of it, whether mm-hmm. you're Crosby, whether you're Joey Votto. I mean, it is so impressive. And he said behind the scenes, well, behind the scenes is working very well because when he gets into the spotlight, he is terrific.
His numbers are off the chart. So shout out to Joey Votto and winning another Lou Marsh. I wouldn't be shocked if he won another one before his career came to an end.
No, not at all.
We'll get to our best bets, tee up a big Leaf game tonight in Philly. Overdrive continues on TSN2. Finally got my wish, my own show again. I've been craving the Brian Hayes Show returning to the airwaves. And I got about 90 seconds because we went long with Joey Votto. So just enough to try to make you some money. Time now for our best bets brought to you by Proline. I'm on Buffalo tonight. Ottawa is a disaster. It's the end of a long roadie. Erik Karlsson rumors are out there. Can't believe it, but I'm going to ride Buffalo tonight. Jersey at home, they've been struggling a bit recently, but I think they get back on the snide tonight, or off the snide. I'll take them over the Kings and Columbus over the Oilers. Throw down 20, you can score 110. You can find my picks on Twitter at TSN1050Radio. And get way into the game with Proline. It's the sports betting game that lets you turn small wagers into big excitement. Proline, get way into the game. Thanks again to Joey Votto. You can find everything podcast and online, TSN1050.ca. Subscribe and check us out on iTunes. Leafs Flyers tonight. No Austin Matthews. We're out of here. We're back tomorrow at 4 p.m. We'll chat then.
Okay, great. Thanks a lot for that look into sports, Brian.
Yeah.